From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a group of women set out to warn other women about a guy they had dated, a guy to avoid. The guy's name was Caleb. He worked at West Elm. He was tall, handsome, and they said very manipulative. He approached women with the same pattern. Come on strong at first, say he was deeply interested, even willing to delete his dating app profiles to focus on the relationship with them. Date for a few weeks, and then ghost. Gone. No explanation, no goodbye, nothing. On to the next. Sometimes Caleb's initial interest would include unsolicited photos of his nude body. Sometimes not, but always he would lead women on and then leave them behind. Since the dawn of time, or at least since dating became common, people have talked to their friends about their experiences, especially bad ones. Women have warned other women about bad guys since forever. The main difference now is that people, in this case women in New York City, can warn not just friends and coworkers, but, I don't know, the entire world, or at least the entire world of TikTok, which can be tens or hundreds of thousands of people who can occasionally become intensely activated about an issue. In the case of West Elm Caleb, it started with a few women posting their dating horror stories, mainly to vent, but also to warn others to avoid this guy. Here's an example of what one of those TikTok videos sounded like.
Over heels, gushing about this guy, and it's like so giddy, and I'm like, oh my god, I recognize this girl. That used to be me when I was stupid and naive. And I'm DMing this girl back, being like, oh my god, do we tell her? Maybe I am jumping to conclusions because I've only heard one story, but I just feel like love bombing is the gateway red flag to all of the other red flags. And if that many girls are commenting about you on a TikTok, that just like doesn't look good. And this is why we need that app I just talked about where we can leave reviews of guys we've dated on Hinge, because then I don't have to make this subtle video trying to warn this girl. I'm just gonna leave it up to the TikTok gods now, and if this video shows up on your For You page and you happen to be dating a West Elm Caleb, consider yourself warned and maybe keep your guard up.
Then more women started to see each other's videos, and they realized they had all dated the same guy. It was kind of funny, but soon it became viral. Hundreds of thousands of responses and shares and views, and people who were not involved started to get themselves involved. Some called West Elm, demanding Caleb be fired. One woman posted Caleb's picture and his full name. There were death threats. Caleb himself basically went dark. He got off social media and probably just hoped he wouldn't lose his job and furniture. For me, there are a number of important questions to consider here. Starting with this, what is your reaction to this? Perhaps you think, look, women are allowed to warn other women about dating problems, or people are allowed to warn other people about dating problems. Don't blame them. Maybe you think, hey, Caleb, if you weren't an awful dude to begin with, this wouldn't have happened. Maybe you think this was way out of proportion. Caleb was bad to these women and dishonest, but that happens in dating all the time, and Caleb is not uniquely special and deserving of headlines in places like the New York Post and the LA Times and just about everywhere. Then there's the question of apps like TikTok. Some writers have argued that TikTok accelerates anger and mob mentality, and what used to be a reasonable response to a bad date is now weaponized because of the platform. But some TikTokers have pushed back, saying the TikTok ecosystem works well, but when mainstream media tries to wade in, they don't understand it, and they are the ones who blow things up. And then there's the issue of what actual harm is and what someone deserves. Do we deserve to have private text messages shared publicly if dates don't go well? Some of the women on TikTok shared Caleb's texts to prove that he was manipulative or dishonest. Is it okay to do that? Another complaint is that Caleb love-bombed women. That's a phrase to describe someone who comes on extremely strong at first, often with dozens of messages in a day or two, only to ghost someone soon thereafter. And speaking of ghosting, it seems obviously uncool to me, but is it worse than that? Is it deserving of a full-on internet takedown? In one widely shared response to this affair, here's New York Times culture and tech reporter Taylor Lorenz.
A lot of what's being said about this man is borderline defamatory. I'm shocked, maybe it's just the journalist in me again, that so many of you guys are comfortable saying what you say on this app because it is wild. Also, people on here will believe anything. I mean, anyone can say anything on this app and the hordes of commenters will just believe it and jump on it and act on it. If some TikToker you follow told you to jump off the cliff, I know 99% of people on this app would jump off the cliff. All of that to say that I've seen comments, you know, trying to get him fired. I've seen people kind of like wanting to put on him on some kind of registry. I mean, I took a ton of screenshots earlier, but it's horrifying just the vitriol that this man is getting. So much of the stuff that he's accused of, like love bombing and just these personal interactions that people have, are very subjective. And it doesn't seem like he has any kind of like institutional power over anyone or anything. He's not like some big time CEO where calling him out in this public and urgent way is necessary.
Okay, so there's a lot to discuss here. Let's welcome our guest this hour. Lindsay Robel is a social commentator living in Boston in her 20s, on the dating scene there, frequent user of dating apps, and a friend of the program. Lindsay, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thanks.
All right. Also want to welcome Joseph Burgess, for the purpose of this program, an online dating enthusiast and someone I think who is pretty smart when it comes to the use of data. Joseph, welcome back to the program.
Evan, thanks so much for having me on. And to the other guests, it's so nice to meet you.
And hello to Ryan Broderick, who is a tech writer and author of the Garbage Day newsletter, who's written about this affair. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
So let me just start with all three of your reactions in general to this, and then we're going to get specific because there's a lot of specific components to this whole thing. But I'm going to start with Lindsay. What do you make of the West Elm Caleb affair, Lindsay?
Yeah. So, like, you know, I saw a lot of the videos when they first started popping up because obviously, you know, like I'm a woman in my mid-20s, the algorithm is going to show me that content pretty immediately. So I saw this like when it first took off. And to me, I mean, my initial reaction, like even at this point, is just, I think like the blow up that's happened, the like witch hunt that's happened, witch hunt, I have some serious thoughts about that phrase, but is not like unique to TikTok. Like this has been a thing forever. But I think that, you know, women warning each other about men who suck, to, you know, put it bluntly, is also not a new thing. And yeah, like how death threats, horrific. Never anybody deserves that. No. But like, you know, when you put your workplace in your dating app bios, like, you know, you run the risk of like crazy people seeing it. And that's, you know, why a lot of my friends don't do that. But yeah, no, I mean, overall, I think the like mob mentality people have been talking about is just like kind of blowing the actions of a couple insane people out of proportion. And it's women have very few ways to like reference check at this point because dating has become so decentralized with the use of apps. So I don't blame girls for going on TikTok or Twitter or wherever and like trying to figure out if the people that they're dating are.
Well, hey, Linz, we got to bleep that word. Just be careful with some of.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're just rolling. So that's all right. We just bleeped one word. But the point, I think, tell me if I'm hearing you correctly, Lindsay. When you say dating has become decentralized, it without, you know, sort of the internet and online sites, apps in the past, dating networks would be where you work, friends and acquaintances, maybe a bar. And, you know, it wasn't a huge ecosystem. Now you might meet somebody through an app and have no friends in common, no people that you know in common, and not a whole lot of way, as you say, to reference check. So you think there is value in this kind of communication if people are behaving badly. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when I, like, meet people via Bumble, Hinge, whatever, very rarely are they people who I have any mutual connections with. And this isn't, you know, your mom's dating. This is, you're essentially having to trust a stranger and take them at their word. And, you know, I've had relationships in the past with people I went to college with where I was able to talk to other people that they dated and find out that the pattern of behavior that I was experiencing was, you know, typical for them. Like the harmful pattern that they were doing to these women was normal. But now, out of college, I can't do that. I have no idea who else the people, you know, I'm dating have dated, and just kind of taking them at their word can be a way to, you know, get your feelings pretty seriously hurt. So,
well, let me ask Ryan Broderick, who's written about this incident and may have a bit of a different view. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is true, but I do think that there's something worth pointing out about TikTok, which is that this is far from the first incident like this to happen in the last 6 months, even. And, you know, you can rattle them off and you can start to see a pattern here. There was a trans woman who was accused of being a serial killer 2 months ago. Her name is Sabrina Prater, and she was posting dance videos that users found creepy, and they started claiming that she had killed people. There was a train enthusiast who goes by the name Francis Borges, who was accused of faking autism. He never identified as being autistic, but he was accused of being inauthentic on TikTok. You had all kinds of TikTok-driven misinformation during the Gabby Petito case. There were countless examples of random people who have been chased off the app, or influencers who have not instructed their followers to harass and dox and threaten to kill people, but who amplify bad actors, whether they're, you know, bigots or anti-vaxxers or what have you, and then they do get chased off the app. It's getting harder and harder to pretend that TikTok attention isn't synonymous with digital violence. And in fact, I think what's the most interesting thing about the West Elm Caleb situation is the women who came forward claiming that West Elm Caleb had manipulated them in some way are now themselves receiving death threats and being chased off the app by users who feel like they were being influenced into sending death threats to West Elm Caleb. So you see this sort of really toxic repeating cycle over and over again. And yeah, there is like the what's called the main character effect of Twitter, where, you know, last year we had Bean Dad, the dad who went viral for teaching his daughter how to eat beans or something. And there's a lot of harassment there. But TikTok is doing this sort of viral cycle at a much more compressed and intense rate, I think.
So let me just follow up one point there. You know, when Lindsay says that the most extreme responses are not acceptable, calling an employer and saying, fire this guy, death threats might be over the top, and certainly seems so in the West Elm Caleb case. But Lindsay is sort of saying, look, you can't control how everybody on the internet responds to everything. Scroll through any YouTube video and there's going to be some wild, insane comments that are just not really representative of what most people think. And, you know, so there's going to be outlier responses. I think the question is, the things that you bring up, are those the norm, and is it a high volume to the point where people's lives are impacted? Their employment could be impacted. Their ability to sort of exist online could be impacted. Or is this just sort of the cost of doing business on these apps, and we have to learn how to just kind of ignore the extreme and use various apps in the best way that they are designed?
I mean, do I think that a normal average person on TikTok is going to call up somebody's workplace and, you know, threaten to kill them? No. Do I think that TikTok as a platform has no stop breaks whatsoever for that kind of behavior spreading? Absolutely. And I also think that it's a matter of incentives. So on a platform like Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, which all have their own issues, there is not so much of a mechanism for chasing clout by reacting. We did see this years ago with like the rise of reaction videos and YouTube drama, and that was a problem that the platform was definitely incentivizing harassment and what we call drama. But TikTok as a platform is incentivizing this idea of harassment, of conspiracy theories, of what Taylor described as, you know, slander or defamation. There's no reason for a TikTok user to not get involved in a viral trend like this. And this is also why we saw the rise of other West Elm Caleb type men being doxxed in other cities. And obviously, like, these are all like pretty bad dudes who probably shouldn't be on dating apps at all, right? But it doesn't stop this trend from spreading in a really uncontrollable way. And, you know, I don't think we are very long for a situation like this turning into something far more dangerous, just by the way that these kinds of phenomena have happened on other websites. Like, we know sort of where the end point of this kind of thing is, and it's physical violence. Mm.
Where are you on this, Joseph Burgess?
Well, I wanted to say first off that basically every man I've dated sounds like West Elm Caleb, at least how he's described.
What is wrong with men? What is wrong with men?
Maybe this says more about me or about men than about anything else.
Gracious.
But I did also want to offer, and I talked to Evan about this, some context from the world of polling data on online dating. So to me, West Elm Caleb is a story about TikTok, but it's also a story about heterosexual dating norms and practices. And, I was just doing some research, and in a 2019 Pew Research Center survey, about 31% of internet users said they had used online dating at all. And the people who are doing it are mostly young, especially people kind of in the 20 to 40 range. So this online dating, which was a novelty almost like 5, 10, 15 years ago, now it's this common generational experience. But it's still new enough that as a society, we're all kind of still figuring out what is an acceptable practice, what's not an acceptable practice. And in the poll, you can kind of really see disagreements about what ghosting is, an acceptable amount of time to sort of date someone before breaking up on them, that these are not necessarily settled questions. So even if you are doing bad behavior, whatever you want to define that as, I think there's a range of behaviors that some people might find acceptable and some not. And we are kind of all figuring this out together as a society, and maybe in a very messy way with this whole saga right here.
That's a very important, I think, point that Joseph raises, and I want to listen to one other clip that we have. Because what Joseph is kind of talking about is, are the norms shifting in terms of what is acceptable, the way we treat people, what our expectations are for how we are treated? And Trevor Noah is the host of The Daily Show. He sort of thinks that, well, I mean, I'll let him speak for himself here. I mean, his response to West Elm Caleb is a little bit of, I think, skepticism that we are handling rejection well. Let's listen to that.
And then they're like, this is abuse. This is a form of abuse. Look, man, I take abuse really seriously. I think we all should, you know? But I don't think all rejection is abuse. Life is about getting rejected. Unfortunately, for everyone to get a yes, someone had to get a no. Every one of us here. The fact that you are in a relationship with someone is because other people rejected them or rejected you. That's the only reason we get there. Life is about rejection. People have a right to reject you, you know? All of these things. It's like people, it's like now we're living in a world where people are like, oh, no, I don't have a right to not feel good. No, that's, I don't want you to not feel good, but people have a right to reject you. In fact, ghosting is not as bad as people think because the person is sending you a message by not sending you a message. You know what I mean? Like, I've never been ghosted and been like, but how do they feel about me?
That's Trevor Noah. So, Lindsay Robel, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is some truth to the idea that a lot of the West Elm Caleb cases were just, like, him talking to somebody for a couple days and then not responding. And I do think that there is also, like, value in sort of investigating this trend of people demanding constant digital availability from the people that they're dating, their friends, whatever. I do see that. But I also think that a lot of the like videos that started off the West Elm Caleb thing were not just like girls who he talked to for 2 days and then stopped responding to. Like, these were women that he dated for like 6 weeks and saw multiple times and, like, you know, ostensibly potentially was sleeping with. And, like, in a couple cases, women who he sent, like, unsolicited pictures of his genitals to. And I think that this, from, you know, kind of what Trevor Noah was saying, but I've seen this a lot from, like, men on Twitter and just like think pieces that I've seen men writing. They're like focusing in on the girls who perhaps had like, you know, less serious cases and are just like upset that they got ghosted, because it allows them to like infantilize women and be like, oh, see, like ghosting, you know, ghosting isn't that bad. These girls are just crazy. And I think it's important to like look at, you know, the real reason that this blew up, which is this dude was serially dating people for like a kind of significant chunk of time, like, and potentially not allowing them to like make informed consent or have informed consent in their decision making. And I think it's hard because he's correct in a lot of ways, but also just a lot of the criticism I've seen of the women like involved in this is just, in my opinion, like very thinly veiled misogyny.
Joseph Burgess, how do you see that question? That the idea you brought up, sort of the norms perhaps shifting and what we're accepting, ghosting, etc. How do you see that, Joseph?
I mean, I think both that Lindsay is absolutely correct, and also that it's from a very specific perspective of, I actually couldn't assume that he's heterosexual, but a lot of the people that are dating Caleb are heterosexual and coming at it from this perspective. I guess a lot of this to me is sort of behavior that I would be more acceptable with or find pretty standard. I don't think it's ever okay to send those types of unsolicited pictures. But I think some other things are more about coming to a place in society about what we owe each other and what we're willing to look for from other people. In terms of if he's serially dating or maybe ghosting, those things might be a little rude depending on how he did it. But it's also, I kind of assume everyone I could potentially be talking to on an online dating app, unless we confirm that we're exclusive in some way, I assume things could end at any time. I assume they could be dating other people, and that's sort of their life, and it's something I've grown to accept. That works for me.
I do
Maybe
think
it wouldn't for anybody.
Yeah, I do think, Joseph, I do think from what I'm reading about this case, he would not only tell some of these women that he would essentially imply exclusivity. They were sleeping together. They were together for weeks. He would tell them he was going to delete his dating apps when he didn't do that. I think there was some misrepresentation at best here to Lindsay's point, because I think what I'm hearing from Lindsay, Joseph, is that if you're telling somebody you're exclusive, that you're not on dating apps anymore, that you're not dating anybody else, and you wake up in bed with somebody at 9 a.m., and at 3 p.m. that afternoon you're in bed with somebody else, you are not giving them enough information to make decisions about their lives. And that is a next level sort of problem. How do you see it, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think informed consent is important. If I'm dating multiple people or seeing multiple people or whatever you want to call it, I always want to give them that information so they can make their own decisions. And that's where I think he really did mess up, is I'm not as worried about the ghosting per se, at least from my perspective, but about the information he's giving to other people in other ways. But in terms of the ghosting, you know, I would say I had probably ghosted one or two people where I didn't feel safe necessarily talking to them or continuing that. And I don't think that's probably their experience. But I think the informed consent and the unsolicited pictures are probably a bigger element from my perspective of what he did wrong.
Fair enough. And we're going to get to unsolicited pictures coming up here, because I think sometimes that gets glossed over here. Ryan Broderick, are the norms shifting? I mean, is this a case where, I don't know, the olds like me, yeah, I'm 42. I'm looking at this going, boy, I can't, how do you ghost somebody? Like, that's not, but are the norms shifting of what is acceptable? And is there a sort of a culturally collective decision that what used to be viewed as like, well, that kind of is not cool, is now viewed as like, hey, if you treat people like this serially, you could be the lead story on TikTok for a day or a week. I mean, I don't know if that's a negative development or positive. I'm just trying to figure out like what's happening in the culture, Ryan.
first think, like, the idea of this being a story that elevates the level where we're having a conversation about it on the radio is troubling. I think that's, like, very scary and bizarre. But I think to answer your question, there is a dimension to this that I think is worth acknowledging, which is that, you know, I was doing the math in my head the other day when I was thinking about this, but, like, if you were 19 years old in March 2020, you are probably about to turn or have turned already 21, which means you went into COVID-19 as a teenager, and you are now an adult. And there's a very good chance that you probably have not had anything close to a normal young adulthood over the last 2 to 3 years. And I think that there's an absolutely important dimension to this entire story, which is that, like, if your entire experience of dating has been managed via apps like Tinder and Bumble and Hinge, and then your social life is playing out over parasocial platforms like TikTok, group chats, Instagram, I think that starts to create this, like, bizarre effect where everything is a form of internet content. People on Tinder are a form of internet content. You know, stories that happen to you are things that you can turn into TikTok content. And I think that starts to have some pretty wonky effects on the way you think about the world. I think that we've all probably experienced some version of this over the last couple of years where, you know, our experience of life is a little more virtual than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And this is basically like a virtual version of a bunch of women discovering a really bad man in their neighborhood, right? But it's now playing out on a platform with one of the most powerful algorithms we've ever seen, TikTok.
Lindsay, do you find that analysis unfair to the women who posted this stuff? Or is there some truth to any of what you heard from Ryan there?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is like something that requires pretty heavy nuance. So I do think there is some truth to parts of what he's saying. But I do think it, like, feels infantilizing, again, to say that it's, like, scary or dangerous or whatever, that this is something we're talking about on the radio. And, like, I do want to point out that, yeah, people are having atypical dating experiences, atypical young adulthood because of the pandemic, for sure. But Caleb is not 19, right? He was not, this man is like 25, 26, I think. And like, we can't, I just think that that is sort of like not a relevant point in this discussion because he's not a child, you know? This is a grown man. And I do think that there is truth to, you know, this being basically the digital equivalent of women finding out that, like, a dude in their neighborhood is not great, right? And there is truth to TikTok having a very powerful algorithm. But I think that since TikTok sort of became a thing in the U.S. at the really, like, the start of the pandemic, I would say, there's been this, like, constant swirl of fear that's, in my opinion, sort of wrongly directed at TikTok in a way that it isn't at other social media. Because, yes, like, the TikTok algorithm is really good, really, really good at getting you content that is relevant to you. But this phenomenon of, like, people piling on is not unique to TikTok. It's not. And it feels like the only time I ever hear people complain about this much or like talk about how dangerous this is when it's something like West Elm Caleb or like Couch Guy, right? Like it's never, to his point about the trans woman who was being unfairly demonized on TikTok, right? Like there was nowhere near the level of like think piece uproar about that because, you know, marginalized people like trans women, people have not as much of a problem when they're the target, right? They never have. But because the target is a, you know, well-off, attractive white man who lives in New York City, like there are all of these men I find on Twitter and like the New York Post or whatever publishing these bizarre think pieces about how dangerous this is when they had nothing to say about it before. You know, I do think that like yes, this is the digital equivalent of people finding out somebody in their neighborhood sucks, except your neighborhood is all of New York City, depending on how big you set your radius on your dating profiles. And I don't know about you, but I don't really know my neighbors anymore. Most of my friends don't know their neighbors. If you live in an apartment building, could you tell me the person across the hall's name? Because most of the people I know really couldn't. And that's what I was saying earlier about people sort of having to use social media to check and make sure that the people they're dating, you know, are safe, because they can't just go knock on their neighbor's door anymore. Like, that's not where your dating circle is. So,
Can I just jump in on that point? Because I have an email I want to read that I think is related here. And I want to draw a distinction and ask all three of our guests to weigh in on part of the point that Lindsay was just making. Lindsay is, to my ears, making a point that it's one thing to warn people that, hey, don't waste your time with this person. They're not up front. They're a waste of time. It's another to say, I'm going to alert people to an actual danger of some kind or an actual injustice of some kind. And what Lindsay sees is an app that does that sometimes pretty importantly and pretty successfully. Generally speaking, I think what Ryan sees, and we'll talk about this in a second with him, is an app that is just more designed for outrage and content and driving drama. And so let me read this email from a listener named Alexa, who says, Evan, I think the vitriol regarding West Elm Caleb has gotten out of hand, but I understand why the women who dated him posted those videos. I briefly dated a guy who came on strongly and then ghosted, but that's not what I take issue with. He did some things that bordered on sexual assault. After I got out of that situation, I told some friends about it who said that they had two other friends who experienced very similar things with the same guy. I warned a friend of mine about this person when she expressed an interest in dating him. If I had known what a selfish and abusive person he was, I never would have dated him in the first place. I don't think there's anything wrong with women or men warning others about people who are toxic or dangerous. Should it rise to the level of West Elm Caleb? I don't think so. But he and other guys like him bring some of this reaction on themselves. Don't be a jerk. Have some respect for other people. That is from Alexa. Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so one, that was a well-written email. Two, I think that the problem, she's spot on, is that he did some things that could border on like coerced consent. And I do think that the other guest points about like not assuming exclusivity with people that you're dating unless it's explicitly stated, totally valid. That's also how I operate in dating. However, at the point when somebody's telling you that you are the only person that they are sleeping with, that is sort of the point where a lot of people I know make decisions about what kind of protection they're using, make decisions about like if they're going to, you know, keep getting screened for STDs and stuff. And like, I know personally, I make different choices about how I approach my sexual health based on whether or not the person I'm sleeping with is also sleeping with other people. And not allowing women to like make those choices with enough information is not a great thing to do. And I think probably with, you know, just the scale of how this dude is dating every woman in New York City, apparently. But I think it's just, you know, he's lucky that he didn't cause like a Timothée Chalamet-esque chlamydia breakout in Brooklyn. Like it's pure luck that he didn't like negatively impact these women's sexual health. And that is not something I take lightly.
Ryan, how do you see this question of where real harm comes in? Because part of the reason I shared what Taylor Lawrence said at the top of the hour is that I think that represents some of the Trevor Noah, the Taylor Lawrence reaction is like, we are too broadly describing harm. But Lindsay is saying, there are real examples of possible harm that we're missing here. And this can be a very useful and helpful thing for people. And I think that's sort of what Alexa was saying in the email. Where are you on that question of harm and how we define it and what to do about it, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, so first off, I should say I've known Taylor for years. She's great. And we sort of align on topics like this. I sort of tend to agree with her. She's also someone I think who's really sharp when thinking about online harassment, as someone who, if you ever really want to see something super frightening, go through her Twitter mentions as a woman working in the media. But what I think that this is sort of a great example of is a question of scale. So I think we're all sort of aligned here that this Caleb guy is bad, is a bad dude, and probably should not have been accessing these apps to do the things he was doing and treating these women this way. And we can all sort of agree that these women have the absolute right to talk to each other about what's going on and alert each other to what's going on and keep each other safe. And then beyond that, it kind of starts to break down in terms of how you want to define whatever we're talking about. And the other simple fact is, like, we just don't actually know much beyond what has been put on TikTok. Throughout all of the frenzy, there are still a bunch of questions, and Caleb has not come forward. He's not done some sort of Today Show interview yet. So, you know, until that happens, like, we've got what we've got. But what I think is important to point out is a matter of scale. So this guy, Caleb, who works at West Elm, it's not like we're talking about someone with a tremendous amount of power on a national level, and yet we've elevated him to a national level. And you can point to a bunch of different reasons for why this happened. Yes, the news media absolutely obsesses over whenever a white guy's feelings get hurt. That is a huge, huge bias in American media. And then you can also point to the fact that American media in the last 10 years has been trained to chase after viral stories with an absolute rabid intensity. Every newsroom had a couple people scanning Twitter for stuff that will make people angry to outrage over and amplify it. And that happened. And a lot of the TikTokers involved have said, like, why are you covering this? Why are you writing about our dating drama? And I sympathize. I've talked to TikTokers for my own stories who've said, like, why are you covering this? Fair enough. But no matter what the reason was, we are still left with this fact that, like, a random guy in New York on Tinder has become a national talking point for almost a week and a half now. And right now it's about a random guy on Tinder in New York. But it's not always that. And these stories tend to spiral out of control in a way that is very scary for people, you know, whether it comes down to something like death threats or something more actionable like swatting. You know, we know what happens when the internet fire hose is pointed at somebody. And what we know is that there's no real telling what's going to happen next. It becomes really unpredictable. And I just think to do that to somebody who has no real social power is scary to me.
Is it different to you if this is a CEO, if this is an executive, if this is a politician?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think that's in sort of a post-Me Too era, I think we can all agree that that is a really useful mechanism for social media. It's done a lot of really good stuff. But we're not talking about a Harvey Weinstein here. We're talking about a guy who we don't even know the name of. We're talking about a guy who works at a furniture store. I think the scale is a little off. That's all.
Okay. Joseph, where are you on that?
I'm just laughing to myself, imagining West Elm Caleb on, like, The View or something. And he's, like, defending himself to everybody.
Well, you know that's coming, don't you?
In 5 years, he's going to be a senator Missouri or something.
that's the most true thing that's been said this hour. That guy is, like, destined for all of the upward mobility. He really is.
If he wants it, it's out there. So I wanted to kind of return to this idea of polling. And just one thing I thought was really interesting was that a large plurality of people, when asked, is dating better, worse, or the same as 10 years ago, said it was worse. And that's around the time that especially heterosexual people, I think, started becoming part of the online dating world and getting more familiar with it. So we're adopting these mechanisms for dating, and by and large, we're not really enjoying it. We're not happier. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're not safer, especially if you're talking about these ideas of informed consent. So it's not great. But at the same time, I really like online dating. I've met all of my partners from there, a lot of my best friends from there. For queer people, it can really be this kind of lifeline. You know, when I move, the first thing I do is kind of open the apps and try and build dating apps, I mean, and try and meet new queer people off of there. So I just wanted to kind of stress, because it's important to me, that you can have these really different experiences. So at the same time that West Elm Caleb is happening, I met a new friend in Sweden. So there's a lot going on.
I mean, so one of the conclusions is ban men. Should we also ban heterosexual people? Is that sort of where we're going with this?
Who's left? I'm going to a very small amount of people who are allowed to be on dating apps.
Now,
yeah.
But Joseph, I want to ask a question of you, Joseph, and I want to hear from all of our guests. I think this is, it's been, I think, glossed over a little bit in the West Elm Caleb stuff. There's certainly some evidence that he was sending unsolicited pictures, nude pics, to the women that he was just starting interaction with. And as much as older listeners hear this and think, why would anybody do that? It is certainly true that younger adults are more, more accepting is the wrong word. It's more likely to happen if you're in your 20s and you're dating, you're in your late teens, you're in your 30s. I get that that is more normal-ish if you're dating. I don't know about the unsolicited part of it. I don't know how common that is. And I don't, in my own sort of bias, that does not feel acceptable ever to send unsolicited nude pics without someone's consent or knowledge that they're coming. And Joseph, I mean, what am I missing there? How do you feel about the unsolicited nude part of this?
I have something I really wanted to bring up, so I'm so glad you asked. So first of all, don't do it. I guess I could just stop there and stop talking and we'd be good. But so I wanted to talk about, you can't really fix people, right? But I think you can change the structures of online dating in a way that would maybe encourage better behavior. And one thing I've liked is that one of the gay dating apps I'm thinking of has a little category, like a box you can tick that says, accepts not safe for work content. And it's no or not at first. Or never. So it has a kind of variety of options. So if that is something you want to engage with in other people, there might be a way of kind of structuring that so you can do it with people who actually want to receive it.
Okay, so you do that going in before you even contact somebody. You understand they are a never. Never send, don't want it, don't do it.
Yes, so you know that. And, you know, do these men who are sending it probably know the women don't want it? Yes. But I
don't
do think
know.
Maybe,
I think men are very confused
maybe
about
I'm...
I don't I mean the whole Brett Favre thing, I think men are very confused about whether anybody would want that. And you know, it's almost always no. And I think a lot of men are just sort of drunk on the idea that people would. I don't really know why. But Joseph brings up a very interesting point, Lindsay, which is, you know, some of these apps, especially in the queer community, are structured to address that right out of the gate. How do you feel about that, Lindsay?
Mm-hmm. So, like, as an also queer woman, I totally agree with him that, like, the queer community is perhaps doing a better job of, like, preempting this kind of harassment on dating apps targeted toward us. And I think that that's huge. But yeah, no, I like 100% agree with him that it's not acceptable ever to do that unsolicited. I do think that men know that women don't want them because it's enough of a discussion at this point that it's a trending topic on Twitter like once a week.
But why do men do it then?
Oh, I think that a lot of men, whether they realize that this is what is happening in the back of their brain or not, I think it's subconscious a lot of the time because, you know, just like being socialized as a man in the society we live in, I think a lot of men get off on women's discomfort to some degree. Oof. And I, you know, that's been my experience. That's been my friend's experience. But I do just also want to say, like, how when you send a picture like that to someone that you don't know particularly well, you have no idea the context in which they're going to be receiving it, right? And I don't mean like if they're going to open it at work. I mean, like, you know, for example, I knew a guy in college who sent a picture like that to a lot of people in a specific sorority. And like, I knew a couple of them, and I knew a couple of them had sexual trauma, and it was like, you know, they had a really rough time receiving that picture. And so it's just like not okay to ever assume how somebody's going to receive that. But I also did just want to say to an earlier point that was made about like institutional power, I think sort of I've seen a lot of men like invoking the language of like intersectional feminism and theory and just progressive, you know, leftism, and talking about like institutional power dynamics and how, you know, this isn't as big of a deal as if it was like Bill Gates or whatever. But I just want to sort of pose the question, how much harm does a man have to cause before it's enough, right? Like how many women does a man have to hurt before it's enough for other men to care? And I do want to say that like this dude did not work at West Elm. He wasn't like selling furniture. He is a college educated furniture designer for West Elm, which is like arguably one of the most popular furniture stores, like furniture retailers among like,
yeah,
it's a really good job. So like ostensibly this dude has money, right? Like this is not somebody like that isn't financially well off. This isn't somebody who is uneducated. This isn't just like some random dude. Like this is a man who is ostensibly well off, who is college educated, who has a job that is going to be attractive to a lot of women because it is both with like a household name furniture retailer that's popular among women in their mid-20s and is like in the arts, right? So like I do just want to point out that when we think about institutional power, I find that a lot of people who are of like non-marginalized identities tend to gravitate to the idea that institutional power like only exists in the context of like if somebody's a CEO, right? Or if somebody is a millionaire. But it's a lot smaller than that, right? Him being a white man with money gives him institutional power at baseline. I just think we need to be careful with like invoking that kind of language. And if we're going to talk about like institutional power, then, you know, we have to talk about like the role that gender and the role that money and the role that all whiteness plays in this, right? Not just, is he a tech CEO? But yeah.
All right, Ryan Broderick, you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. Of course, as a white guy working at an upscale furniture company, like he has institutional power. And the fact that he's putting that in his Tinder account is a way to signify that. I still think it is a matter of scale, and it's a matter of, you know, how public we want to make our lives. And I think at the bare minimum, it is worth questioning why an application like TikTok is producing so many of these stories so fast. And it's sort of the main point I've had through all of this, which is just that I think there's content moderation questions that are worth asking. And I think there are questions worth asking about exactly what we want to use the internet to do on a national level. And so a lot of people, they'll follow the West Elm Caleb story and they'll be like, that's great. He deserved it. We got him. Great. Awesome. But that same technology is used for a lot of different things. And I think it is just worth probably pausing and saying, should there be some friction between a random person on TikTok becoming a national news story? And I don't see TikTok as a company asking those questions.
Okay. And it sounds to me like even if you agree with some of the, hey, let's not cry too much for one guy here, your concern is the app itself is designed for content outrage and drama, and that where we are going next, you think is pretty dark, Ryan. Is it salvageable? Is there a fix for that?
I don't know. That's the question. I don't know how baked in it is. I mean, we know for a fact that the mechanisms inside of Facebook led directly to the manifestation of people on January 6th the Capitol. We know that certain aspects of Twitter, like actual physical violence, we know that YouTube has caused like actual problems like this. TikTok is a new platform. We don't really totally understand it fully yet. But it's not even just where we're heading. Like, you know, the misinformation caused by TikTok. So the tips that TikTok produced during the Daddy Petito disappearance were helpful. Some of them were. But then there were also so many that there was a bunch of, like, disconnected stories being, like, pushed as being connected, which kind of clogged up a lot of the processes there. So it's twofold.
Okay.
And it's this sort of, like, rocket ship that I think is very hard to control.
Okay, 30 seconds, Lindsay. Go ahead, Lindsay, 30 seconds. Final thoughts from you on this.
Yeah. I was going to say I totally agree that we need to talk about the way that social media algorithms function, their role in society, how content is elevated on them. And I believe that wholeheartedly. My problem with this is just that from what I've seen, especially from men, that has not been the focus of the discussion. It's just outrage at these women having the audacity to like hold the men that they date accountable. But I think that if the discussion can be shifted to talking about the way that TikTok functions and how it uses our data and all of that, that's a valuable conversation. Mm-hmm. But like making these women scapegoats and allowing it to devolve into just misogyny on behalf of having that conversation, or I guess in lieu of having that conversation, is, you know, something we have to watch out for.
Gotcha. And final second, 30 seconds, Joseph, go ahead.
The only other thing I'll add is that I'm like 25% convinced that this is just West Elm. Just marketing or doing something. I don't know. So I'll let everyone go.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I would say even having just considered that right now, it's like 40% possible. Good
it's
gracious.
It's very possible.
Oh, my God. Joseph, thanks for making the time for us this hour. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Lindsay Roble, thanks for making time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
And Ryan Broderick, you can find his work as the Garbage Day newsletter and a tech writer and author. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
All right. From the whole team here at Connections, Megan Mack, Emma Ray Stein, Rob Braden, Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.